Today on Anatomy of a Movie, we're talking about Alfonso Cuarón's semi-autobiographical film, Roma. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Hello, moviegoers. Welcome back to Popcorn Talk Network. We are here talking Roma for Anatomy of a Movie show. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. Joining me, I have...
Mina Wahab.
Hello, Mina. It's us two once again. Look at that. We're talking Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, semi-autobiographical, which is actually very interesting once, you know, I did the research for this film. Mm-hmm. And beautiful cinematography and all that, and we're definitely going to get into it. But before we do, obviously, we have a few quick housekeeping notes for all you listeners and viewers at home or wherever you are listening to us. If we are definitely very spoiler-filled in this movie, so we're going to be talking all about it. If you haven't seen the film yet, pause us, go watch the movie, and then unpause us, and then listen to our review. And then in the description below, there's a PDF link. If you click that, it has all of our notes, of all the production notes that we're going to be covering in the film, stuff that we're definitely going to talk about in depth, and if we don't cover it, it's all in the notes for you, so you can follow along the conversation as well. All right, let's get into it. What were your thoughts about Roma? Quick thoughts.
Initially, I tried watching it three times. First two times, fell asleep.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about the movie. I just couldn't get through it. It made me so sleepy. But then after I did a little bit of research and I realized, okay, this is semi-autobiographical. This was dedicated to Lebo. Then I was like, okay, this interests me more now. Let me try it one last time. And then I watched it in its entirety, and I actually really liked it. The thing that made it so hard to get through initially was the fact that I was like, okay, where is this movie going? It's not plot-driven. It's not character-driven. It's essentially a slice-of-life story. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was such a different format than what I'm used to when watching a film, that I didn't know what to expect. So then when I realized, okay, this is a slice of life story, I could really enjoy it and be like, okay, I feel like I'm living with this family now. I feel like I'm kind of going along with their adventure. And then I became more invested in the characters as a result. So that's why I ended up liking it so much, because it was so authentic. It was so real and raw.
Yeah, agreed. It took me twice to watch this film. I first watched it back, I think 2 months ago. From, now that we're covering this. So the first time, I was not sold the first time. I remember liking the second half of the film more than the first.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to rewatch it again for this discussion. And overall, there were some elements of the first half that I enjoyed more than I did the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it does take the average viewer a couple times to watch it. If you are like a true cinephile, you can sit it and enjoy it all in one sitting, but it is a very slow-paced film. There's a lot of moments that are, fully realized in real time, and we're watching. And for the average viewer who's, who's conditioned to editing and pacing on a faster note, not really watching and, witnessing things happening in real time before you, you're going to mm-hmm. lose your attention watching this film. So I understand why it took you three times. It took me twice to fully get into it, but I appreciated everything after
mm-hmm.
now giving it a second chance. And I actually, the first time I watched this with another fellow Popcorn Talk and AfterBuzz alum here is Jeffrey Graham, who also watched this film. Jeff, what were your thoughts about this?
I did. I agree with you guys. I feel like my experience of viewing the film was very similar to yours. I love story-driven, kind of dialogue-heavy movies. That's kind of my taste in film. That being said, I do think Rome is a beautiful picture. I understand why people are giving it the acclaim that they are. To me, though, Roma has three or four incredibly stunning scenes. There were moments in this film that I felt myself incredibly moved. But I found that the ultimate experience of the film is much less than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some movies that you go see, and when you finish it, the movie feels like more than the sum of its parts, where it kind of comes together in this beautiful way that takes you by surprise. I think Roma has some really stunning moments, but it doesn't add up to quite what I think it wants to add up to for me, especially compared to what a lot of critics are saying about the film. So I get the hype around it. It just fell a little short for me, and that might have been an expectations problem for me going into it.
Right. I mean, I kind of agree with that also, because there were some moments visually fantastic, executed, and like basically flawless, and just in the normal cinematography and directing standpoint, when you watch a film, beautifully done. But there are other moments that also captivated me, whether it became acting and the emotional aspect that I got involved and more emotionally connected to. And we'll definitely get into this moment. So, but it wasn't consistent all throughout. There were moments that were better acting and moments that were just better visually to watch. Mm-hmm. But not all of it was equal on par with each other throughout the entire film.
Right. Yeah.
So I felt it was inconsistent here and there. And a great film should captivate you entirely.
I feel that way a little bit, too. That's the only reason why I hesitate to say that I loved it. I thought it was strong, but a lot of the film critics' reviews are like, this is the best movie I've ever seen, and wow. And for me, I'm like, okay, like, this is a good movie. It's solid, but 10 Oscar noms? That's a lot.
I mean, I don't want to get into the Oscar nominations just yet, but do you think that's because there's a lot of bias behind that? Because the people who are making these positive statements about it are like personal friends of Alfonso Cuarón, who are in the industry.
I think they genuinely loved it, though, because it's so different from anything we've seen. We haven't really seen a slice of life story like this. I think there was something.
In a while.
Boyhood a couple of years back. Mm-hmm. But this was just felt so like. It felt real, but it, like I said, it could have been edited down. I said this behind the scenes, it felt like watching a live Twitch stream or something where things are just happening on screen and you don't really know what to expect and you're following them along on their journey.
Right. And the story, because there really is no solid storyline like from point A to point B. You're just watching people not knowing like where it's actually heading throughout. Mm-hmm. And this is a 2-hour and 15-minute film that felt like a 4-hour and 15-minute film.
It genuinely, it genuinely felt way longer than 2 hours and 15 minutes. I 100% agree with that. It was, and it wasn't just because I like would rewind and then play again and then rewind. It really did feel so long. It's because the pacing, like I said, so slow. You don't know where it's headed, and it's not a normal sequence of events where there's a conflict and a resolution. There's just things happening to this family. And the part that I would say that I loved about it the most is you would think that if they're doing a slice of life story and it's Alfonso Cuarón's life, that he would tell it from his point of view. But I loved that he told it from the maid's point of view. I thought that was, it changed everything for us because it made her a part of the family, essentially.
Right.
And it just kind of showed the differences in socioeconomic status and class and struggle, and how even though her struggles were very different, you would see like parallels between her struggle and the struggle of the matriarch of the family. Mm-hmm. So there was just like, it was beautifully done, but it was so long.
Yes, well, and getting into it, for the development, we know that it is a semi-autobiographical story of Alfonso's actual life, mm-hmm. and it's dedicated to Lebo, who is the family servant in which, you know, the center character, Cleo, is based upon. And I love how it is told mostly from her. She is the protagonist of the film. We're following her, literally, in just about every shot and every scene of this film. And it's great because we do have, yes, there are so many long takes just on her and we're watching her, but we do have the real time of us audience connecting to her. So when she does go through moments of turmoil and she's crying and breaking down, and especially the scene where she's worried about she's pregnant and stuff, that scene got me both times. And we do have that real time just connection to her, so it does feel like, yeah, the movie is slow, but it does work in some aspects. Gives us enough time to connect to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very well done.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. And and we do see from her perspective, like, being kind of stuck in the middle, or, like, where she is. There are a lot of times where she's brought up with the family and the whole middle class, like, when the matriarch, the mother, is like always complimenting her and saying how much she's loved and how much the children love her, and like brings her into the like family events and going to parties and stuff. And you see she's brought up in that perspective, and there's a level of respect for her. Mm-hmm. And then there are other moments where she's in trouble, where like the boy overhears and eavesdrops on the phone conversation that he shouldn't have been listening to, then immediately gets put in her place. So she's stuck in like two different kind of class systems, and it's frustrating to watch. What do you think?
Yeah, it's like, it's how do you compartmentalize business from personal when you have a live-in maid that's part of the family that you love so much? Yeah, you have two, but it's just like, how do you do that? Like, this movie could have totally gone in a different direction where it just shows like some sort of Cinderella syndrome where she's being mistreated and she's not part of the family. But it was interesting to see, like, yeah, there were so many times where there was misplaced aggression from the matriarch of the family to her, where even when there was like dog poop in the garage, she was kind of like, what are you doing? Or there were so many times she was scolded and told like, don't you have something to do right now? Mm-hmm. And then other times where you just notice a total switch where she's like, you expect that conversation when she's talking about how she's pregnant to go in a totally different direction. She says, are you going to fire me? And the mom goes, of course not. Like, let's fix this. Like, I'm going to make an appointment with the doctor. And then you see this totally different side to the mom where you're like, wow, she's going through a struggle of her own. She is so overwhelmed, even with two maids. You know, it's so much to handle emotionally. And, like, she doesn't have the capacity to emotionally take care of all the needs of all these children and the maid and make sure, like, she's taken care of as well. So it's a lot going on. And nothing going on simultaneously when I was watching it.
No, agreed. I feel like Senora Sofia, that was the mother, she was very inconsistent. You can't tell if she, not to say she's like a villain per se, but like she had her moments where she was very good at nurturing towards her kids, towards the maids. And then there were moments where she would just snap and had no tolerance for anybody. And I think it was more the moments when she was shorter with people was whenever she was having a conflict immediately with her husband at the time. And that's when, and we know that was a tumultuous little relationship. And when that was going wrong, then she would snap and misplace, like you said, misplace anger towards other people who didn't deserve it.
Yeah, right. That was one of my favorite things about the film, if I could hop in, was I think it really does very subtly kind of demonstrate how cycles of abuse work and like how behavior like that is propagated through different people. And I think, like, even though it's not my favorite thing about the film, really what the movie is about is the fact that like this patriarchal society will do anything it can to put women in a subjugated place. So I think Sophia's inconsistent behavior with Cleo was one of the most interesting and subtly realized parts of the film, that when we talk about like a slice of life movie, that was what I think was really, really working in the movie, was how the movie didn't decide how Cleo should be treated. It varied from scene to scene in a way that was completely realistic and believable.
Mm-hmm. And that's realistic when it comes to emotions, too. Mm-hmm. Because just in an average general day, one person can go through so many different emotions in the span of hours. Mm-hmm. So, and like, and I believe it, like, there's a moment where she's happy and nurturing and a moment where she's upset and angry and short with people. But I think that's what mothers go through.
Yeah, and she takes it out in different ways. Like, there's a point in the movie where she has no regard. Like, she's just over it, and she bangs the car through the garage. She doesn't care about having it perfectly fit in. She's like, F this, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Another time she comes home drunk, and she's like, you know what? Like, she's trying to level with, you know, the lady who plays Lebo. And she's like, you know what? Men will never care about us anyway. Like, we're kind of like screwed as a gender, as a species, whatever. And you just see her go through like this range of up and downs where you're kind of like in awe that she can hold all of this together and tell her children to write a card to their dad, even though she knows what's happening. And you're just like, wow, how does she keep it all together? And then over the course of the movie, we see her kind of losing it. Like, she can't keep this facade anymore. But she does such a great job with her kids overall that I was just like, wow, women, mothers, we are truly superheroes.
Yeah. And you appreciate her because you see those moments where she, for so long throughout the film, she was trying to hide all of this from the kids just for their own, you know, protection. Mm-hmm. And like, I appreciate just that mother aspect. And then when she does finally break the news to the kids and all the kids are crying, like, you just want to hug the kids. But she was the great mother in that aspect. And he's like, no, this is what it is. Your father still loves you. He's just not coming back. And that's just heartbreaking mm-hmm. for any situation.
That was the part, I would say, one of the most emotional scenes in the entire movie, where my heart was just in knots. Because we don't, like, we see the kids being kids the whole movie, and then we see the part where there's, like, this transition where this is them realizing something very real, and that innocence is taken away mm-hmm. from this horrible thing that's happening to them.
Yeah, and these are lovable kids, too.
They're so lovable.
And they're so funny, and you see how they love their mother, they love Cleo, and there's really not one dislikable kid. This is a loving family that's very close to each other, and so when you see them, you know, in pain, you just want to hug them.
You really do.
And, like, they don't deserve a deadbeat dad, like, the way that...
They don't.
You know, they had. Going into just, like, the patriarchy, the father, who we only see for, like, maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah, and then he comes back again later.
We see more of his car than the actual father figure, but...
And that was a very smart move, by the way, on Alfonso Cuarón's part, because it kind of shows, like... He's unknown, like, kind of almost like he's relevant to the story, but mm-hmm. he's not relevant. Like, he's out of the picture. So even the scene where he's coming in with his car, and it's one of the very first scenes, they're like, papa, papa, mm-hmm. and he's just, like, smoking the cigarette, and it's such a beautifully cinematic scene, and we're kind of like, who is this guy? Like, what are we going to expect? Is he going to be, like, a brutal father? Is he going to be loving? Is he going to be this? And then we see how much the kids love him, but it's just, our expectations are always subverted. Right. I feel like.
And I think that the whole parking of the car scene near the beginning of the film, we spent literally 3 full minutes watching him take so much time, like, really putting effort into parking his car and not putting a scratch on it. 3 full real minutes. And, like, on film, that's a long time. So we see that the father cares more about his personal life, his personal items, like his car, his job,
bookshelves.
And stuff, books. Like, he cares about himself, his stuff, more than he actually cares about his kids. And that's really painful.
That's such a beautiful way that you put it, Marissa. Like, just thinking about it in terms of the time allocated for mm-hmm. that one scene. We're just like, why is this scene so long? And then at the end of the movie, we're kind of like, okay, it makes sense why Alfonso did things the way he did them, to place an emphasis on
what's important.
And also, like, his perception. This is probably his perception of his father. Like, wow, care about this? Okay.
Yeah, and just, you know, we're definitely going to get into Cleo's man's story, too. But the interesting thing that I noticed of this film, there are two men in this film that, like, big storylines happen, but yet we hardly see these men for not more than 5 minutes on mm-hmm. screen.
Yeah.
But they play such a big part, and their presence is so big that it affects them throughout this entire film, especially the father. We see him for maybe 2 minutes on screen, and then... We see offside conversations and how it affects the mother, how it affects the kids, until the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, getting into Cleo's man, Fermín. What were your thoughts of Fermín?
Yeah, Fermín. You know, we got this stereotypically macho man, and it's just, like, showing this machismo culture in such an interesting way, where you're spending... so long of a scene with him fully naked, mm-hmm. demonstrating his martial arts skills and how he's changed as a man. And that was our initial introduction to him. And in that intro, we're kind of like, oh, this guy, like, maybe he is, like, a good, solid guy. Like, I didn't really know what to expect. And then we see the scene where she tells him that she's pregnant. And we're like, oh, he's so loving. He's taking it so well. Like, I didn't expect him to leave. And then... And then we're just like, this isn't adding up. And then we finally see the last scene of him training and doing the martial arts. And we're like, oh, is he going to, like, own up to what he's doing? Like, what's going to happen? And then he does the thing that a lot of guys do. Like, oh, I was busy. Oh, that's why I didn't return your, like, get back to you. I was busy. I've been really busy training. I'm a new person. I'm doing martial arts. And then he goes off on her. And with the crassest language, says that he will mess her up and do all these things to her if she ever admits that that child is his. And we almost...
beat her. Physically beat her.
And we almost fear for her life, in that the last time we ever see him where he doesn't really speak, but he points a gun at her belly, her fully pregnant belly. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, what is he going to do? This guy is such a loose cannon. So we see this weird trajectory of his character from beginning to end where we're like, oh, maybe he is a changed man. He seems like a solid guy. Oh, he's handling it well. Oh, no, stereotypical male douchebag. Like, what?
Yeah. And I think that's very unfair for us to say stereotypical, but because we are the females on this panel. But it does show that the men, particularly in this film, are not the greatest people.
Mm-hmm.
And like the women have been wronged by these men. And it's really frustrating where we get just this notion of rejection from both of them. Like the father didn't. Like rejected his own family. Fairman rejected Cleo and completely denied this baby. And you don't know. You feel for Cleo because she's just there and trying to get his attention and get his support. There is the line where I believe the mother is actually saying like he hasn't given her any money, any support, like any finances to support this baby, and it's been months now that like he is literally non-existent in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And just from a woman feeling for another woman, that you never want to be pregnant by someone's, you know, from someone's baby, and they're not in the picture to help raise this child.
Yeah.
I have a quick question about Fermin for you guys. One thing that this movie did that was very atypical, Mina, you mentioned it, was there was this fully extended, full frontal male nude scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, as a guy, I'm so used to getting long extended female nude scenes to try to play to our audience and, you know, sell tickets. But how did you guys react to that scene? Is that, like, did you guys view that as, I don't know, I'd just be curious.
Gratuitous?
From a female perspective, how did you guys react to that extended scene? Because it's a big choice.
At first, I was kind of shocked that would be on a platform like Netflix where kids could access it. And I was just like, I was surprised to see something that was like full nudity that I know the film is rated R, but it's accessible by pretty much everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked by that. And you're right, we don't see any male nude scenes. This is like the first time we see a male nude scene.
It's very rare.
Other than like Apocalypto, it kind of reminded me of Apocalypto a little bit in the sense that this wasn't sexualized, but it was just kind of showing that he was so confident in his own skin and his own body in showing off. And in a way, like, he just thought he was such a man. Like, oh, here he is naked performing for her before they're about to be intimate. And I don't think she really cares. She's just kind of, like, sitting there, like, okay, now what? Like, what are you? Like, she doesn't seem to be very impressed by him. But he is so passionate about this. And I think it shows, like, wow, this is what men thought it meant to be a man back then. And mm-hmm. sometimes some men today still feel that way. But it just really, like, it was... It didn't show vulnerability, in my opinion. It showed, wow, so much arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
So much.
No, I agree. There's arrogance and cockiness in his own skin.
No pun intended.
I mean, literally. And it didn't bother me, but, it took me a second, like, oh, okay. But it does show that he really didn't care. He only cared about himself.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care about her. He cared about his self, his body, like the way, because he said he was like reformed his body and his mind to be a better man. And I think he believed in his image more than Cleo, more than this baby.
And what else? The other thing that I think is fascinating on this topic is that here we have two men, both the dad of the family and Fermin, who. Mm-hmm. Clearly care only about themselves, but it's demonstrated in such different ways, and it's also portrayed through such different personalities. The dad is more subdued and quiet and reserved, and Fermin is very much like, I'm a man, let me beat my chest, let me expose myself fully to you. And the dad is more like, the shots of him aren't even exposed. Like, we don't really see his face in the first scene. Everything is hidden. We see the cigarettes. And we see signs that he's been somewhere without fully seeing him. We see that the bookshelves are gone. We see mm-hmm. that everything's gone. So it's interesting that Alfonso would show this, like, would portray this theme of, like, okay, men are selfish in this world, but in two entirely different ways with two entirely different character arcs. I just thought that was really fascinating and well done on his end.
Yeah, and I like it how it shows that one was more like more timid, more introverted, and another was more extroverted.
Right.
And but we still got the same result in the end, no matter how any way you spin it. Abandonment and rejection,
and a total unraveling of the family unit in a sense. But then at the same time, the silver lining is like women supporting women and coming together as a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For a man, just to see the one moment where she finds, like, when they're in the movie theater and she announces that, you know, she thinks she's pregnant, and he's still loving up until that point, quote unquote loving, kisses her and intimate with her, and then he walks away and you never see him come back. And that was the moment I was like, no, he's gone. Like, you knew that was going to be an issue, and I just feel for women in that sense, because I personally have witnessed other women go through pregnancy by themselves because the mm-hmm. man left.
Who's worse? Situations. Who do you think is worse, Fermin or the dad in this situation?
It's hard. I think we see more Fermin in this movie physically. He bothered me more because we saw him actually yell at Cleo when she doesn't deserve it. We saw him threaten her twice, visually with a gun. Just killing. And then also with words. It's like, I'm going to physically beat you. So, like, he's more violent. Where I don't feel the father was violent
mm-hmm.
in that sense. I don't think he would actually hurt the kids physically.
Right.
But I believe for a man would.
Yeah, 100%.
So I was more afraid of him.
It's so interesting that he's in this martial art class that is supposed to have some sort of spiritual awakening and mental enlightenment. And then we see, wow, that's not doing any of that for him.
He's the most angriest person.
Yeah.
I did like the moment where the instructor was telling them to do this pose.
Yeah.
And Cleo was the only one physically capable of doing it.
Did you try doing it?
No, I didn't, but yeah. I was watching it. I was like, look at Cleo. All right, girl. I see you. Yeah, she pulled it off, and where no one else, out of hundreds of people that were in that shot, no one else could do it, but Cleo was the only person physically capable of doing it.
She's the only one who's enlightened.
And it shows that, like, she, not in a way, but, like, she is better and she is capable of doing things
mm-hmm.
where other people aren't. So, like, you just kind of root for her where, you know, it's something so simple and she can she could pull it off.
And you don't have to be a man who's gone through so much training to do this.
Right.
You could just be a strong, independent woman.
Standing on your foot, it's not that hard. Yeah. People. Just saying. I want to get a little bit into the directing because this is Alfonso Cuarón's baby. He's been wanting to do this ever since really the beginning of his career. But he finally started putting things in motion back in 2006. And, well, he was talking about it back in 2006. And he really just wanted to get the perspective of back, like, recovering his memories, basically, from when he was a child. Basically, the kid, Toño, is Alfonso Cuarón, like, in human
Oh, form. Was like, it Tonio? I kept wondering if it's Pepe, if it's Tonio, because Pepe, like, we fell in love with Pepe.
Yeah, Pepe was sweet.
Oh, he's so cute.
And
then Tonio is the one who cries, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Really, Tonio is the physical representation of Cuarón,
mm-hmm.
Basically. And so what are your thoughts of, first, doing, like, a semi-biographical storyline from like a time about 50 plus years ago now, like, Cuarón trying to execute that.
I feel like now is the perfect time for him to do it because he has credibility, you know. He's made so many great movies, and it's like, it's hard to do a movie like this when you're not known as a director, but when you have, like, this huge filmography of things you've directed, it's easier to get something like this off the ground. And I think he did a great job in the sense that it's very hard to make something autobiographical feel real. Like, we have so many movies where it's either biographical, semi-autobiographical, and it feels like one of those, like, very, like, over-the-top cinematic, inspirational movies. This felt so raw and real, and I think it's because of all of the little touches he did of, you know, not really using a ton of actors in the film, but mm-hmm. using real-life people, even with the hospital scene. Like, having them be real doctors, having the lead be be someone who wasn't even an actress, who had no prior acting experience. Like, what?
I believe that's what you called street casting. Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong. Street casting is when you literally pluck actors out of obscurity.
Yeah, that's right. In this case, it was a little different, though, because her sister, who was an actress, auditioned.
Yeah.
So I think street casting would be more like when... with the doctors, that would be street casting. With Cleo's, it would be a little different. But still, I can't believe what an unbelievably nuanced and incredible performance Yalitza Aparicio gave, considering she had no acting experience. Mm-hmm. You've got to credit Alfonso Cuarón as a director there, because she truly gave, I think, one of the best and one of my favorite performances of last year.
Yeah, and I definitely connected to her character, to Cleo. I felt for her in all the situations she was in.
Mm-hmm.
When she was delivering news, when she was pregnant, when she was going from place to place to place and, like, witnessing other people's lives. Like, she was literally everywhere. And all the emotions she was feeling, I felt it, too. I felt for her.
It's like how he directed it. Like, there's so many scenes with her walking somewhere where the scene takes forever. And it just makes you feel like you're walking with her, you're going with her, you're feeling like that feeling of, wow, time is just moving forward in the slowest way possible. How must it have felt for her then? But for me, like, I know, like, everyone probably empathized with her the most. For me, I felt like I empathized with Sophia's character, the mom.
Mother.
Yeah, it was just, like, her performance was just so, it was so authentic to me. It just felt so real, the changing moods and, like, trying to keep everything together and create this facade of a happy marriage that everything would be okay, and then her falling apart and then picking herself back up. Like, her performance was just so beautiful. Her character, like, I related to her character the most.
Yeah, interesting. I felt for Cleo the most. And just to go back to correct myself, it was Paco. Paco is the representation of Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, Paco?
Yeah,
was
Paco.
I was rereading my notes.
It's Paco is the representation of Alfonso Cuarón, not Tonio.
Interesting.
There are a lot of children in this film.
I have
film.
To go back and figure out which one Paco
yeah,
was
Paco.
Then. Yeah.
And I liked how there was, just watching it again twice, there are moments that build up in the first part of the film that pay off in the second half. There's a lot of foreshadowing moments where you see the kids near the beginning with playing with guns. And I was with you, and I remember saying something out loud. I was like, that's gonna be big, that's gonna, you know, play a big part. And sure enough, that, like, an hour later, we see the whole raid scene, which is actually what happened in Mexico.
And I thought
with
there was,
guns.
I misjudged what would happen, because I thought there was foreshadowing in the beginning where we see the maid saying, "I'm dead, isn't it nice to be dead?" And she's just, like, lying down looking up, and I'm like, is this going to be the end scene, too? Her lying down looking up, is it going to be like that?
She better not
and
die.
And then that doesn't happen, and I'm just like, oh, okay, like, good. But I thought that something like that would happen. And then I thought, again, with the kids drowning, I was like, when he says, "I'm dead," I thought it would be the same thing again. And no, it didn't happen, but there's so many scares and so much tension and suspense. But I'm glad it wasn't one of those, like, you know, let's just put in a really dramatic, sad ending so that this can get Oscars. It was very realistic and slice of life. And we didn't need to have the unnecessary death, so we didn't.
No. And I'm glad we didn't. I mean, like, we did have a death, a sad death. It was, unfortunately, the baby was a stillborn.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts of how this whole scene just unfolded before our eyes?
That was so heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking, but my emotions were so mixed, because I was like, wait, but she didn't want the baby. But, oh, biologically and hormonally, that is so traumatic to have something growing inside of you and then losing it. And I think it wasn't
also
until...
Also during stress.
Yeah, during...
It was under duress.
Yeah, under a ton of stress.
During a raid.
And it's like, yeah, he didn't... Fermin didn't shoot her in the stomach, but just, like, physically being in that situation and then losing your baby after, and you're just, like, panicking, and your water breaks during something like that, and you're rushing over there to the hospital. And keep in mind, this isn't, like, modern medicine. This is the 1970s, in Mexico,
and they were stuck in traffic
for
hours.
You see the doctor, and he ends up being the dad, and we're just like, what is happening? Like, how is everything so full circle? But the part that killed me the most, I think the hardest part, wasn't when she was looking over to make sure her baby was breathing, but when she finally realized, no, it's dead, but let me bond with it and say goodbye to her.
Ugh.
And she's just, like, holding her, and it's a stillborn, and, oh, I cried. I could not. That was a very, very powerful scene.
No, this was a moment where it got me.
I was so impressed by the way the camera just held. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think directorially, the choice to just literally set the camera up, it's a stationary shot, and we are eavesdropping. You know, we're voyeurs in this scene, watching one of the most painful moments of her life. This is an example, again, I think the movie falls short in certain components, but this scene is one of the best of the year for me, and everything about it was just so incredibly moving and naturalistic, and just, I mean, beautiful in the sense of artfully crafted, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And we see so many long real-time shots throughout this entire film. We see people walking from one end of the town to another in real time. You're like, you know, editing. Come on, you guys. But this was a scene where I felt it actually could have been longer. I felt like they could have held... She could have held her baby even longer. She held the baby for maybe 20 seconds.
I think,
and I was like,
yeah.
And I remember when they took the baby away, and I just remember thinking, I was like, that's it? We watch someone park a car for 3 minutes, but she can't hold her stillborn baby for 3 minutes? You know, it was very painful in that sense.
And it felt super intentional. It felt like, oh, there's such a loss of power here. Things are happening to her. She lost her baby. I know she didn't want it in the first place, but to still lose it is so traumatic. And for it to be taken away from her that quickly, and it's been living in there for 9 months, and then it's like, oh, that's it? We're done here?
20 seconds. It was over in 20 seconds.
I've been with her for this long, like, making sure she's okay, like, trying to figure out what I want to do, and now she's just taken away from me like that. Like, how does life change in a second? And that's so evident in so many other scenes of this film where everything's fine. Then there's a protest. Then someone dies. And it's not like a gradual, like, oh, someone's dying slowly. It's like, no, everything's taken away in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, but that's life. And that's why this is such a realistic slice of life story.
And I think that also, like, emotionally, you felt the turmoil there. And I think this was probably definitely the moment that got her Oscar nominated. Because it also reminded me, if you guys have ever seen the movie Junebug, 2006, Amy Adams. This is where she got her first Academy Award nomination for a very similar scene. Spoiler, if you haven't seen that film, she loses her baby, too. And she breaks down. In the hospital, which definitely, if you've ever seen that film, that definitely, that performance of her reacting to, you know, a loss at the hospital, that got her Academy Award nominated for the first time. And this movie, this scene, definitely reflected that. It had the same emotional beats that, you know, we feel for her, like any loss of a child. And this, I'd have to say, this was probably the moment where they gave her the nomination. It's very well deserved. It's very earned.
Yeah. Earned. And it's not the only scene that was super, like, intense. We have the beach scene later on, and we're just like...
Yeah, let's get into the beach scene where, like, it really wraps up just, you know, the loss of the stillborn child. And because, first of all, gorgeous. We'll get into cinematography before we go. But the long tracking shot, and talking about different emotions, where it does run so long that the kids are having fun, and it's nice and bright, and 2 minutes later, within the same shot, now there's turmoil, there's jeopardy, there's danger. So a lot of the ups and downs, literally, of emotions with the ebbs and flows of the waves. But then we see when Cleo actually saves these children and brings them back to the beach, and she realized, I didn't want my baby. I didn't want her to be born.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole breakdown, like, this is where, like, again, I lost it. Your thoughts of this, that moment?
It shows how complex these feelings are, that it's not just trauma, it's guilt. Like, you feel like you brought something into fruition because this is something that you wanted or didn't want so badly, and then it happens, and you just feel guilt. Like, am I a bad person?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why this is happening to me? But I got what I wanted. How come I'm unhappy? It's just so many complex emotions going on. And, I mean, I think usually we don't care about characters in movies like maids or, you know, the help or servants. Or we don't care about these people. And here we have a movie where she's the central figure of the movie, and we care about her so much. We care about her well-being so much. She's not just another statistic. This isn't just another loss of life. This is someone that we care about. We see how vital she is to this family, mm-hmm. how her role affects everything else. Without her, maybe two of the kids would have died. Mm-hmm. Without her, maybe this family would fall apart. Without her, how many other things would be affected? Like, we see that it's not just status. Like, people are people, and everyone has an important role in keeping something together. If someone is gone, it could affect everything. So I think that was an underlying message there. Like, this woman was so important to Alfonso Cuarón, and he wanted to dedicate this entire film, like, what he calls one of the most important pieces he's ever made in his life, mm-hmm. to this woman.
Yeah.
Who helped raise everyone.
And I think this scene was also heartbreaking, too, in the metaphorical sense that, like, she, and just the irony that she can save someone else's children, but she couldn't save her own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's heartbreaking when you think about it, too. But it shows that she cares more about, well, it's not to say she didn't care about her own child, but, like, she cares about this family so much that she was willing to risk her own life, because she doesn't know how to swim. Also, in real life, she doesn't know how to swim. That she waded out into the depths of the waters, almost risking her own life to save these children. But it just shows, like, how much they mean to her and how much she means to them. Mm-hmm. And even when they go back home after the scene, the children are still raving about her. It's like, Cleo saved us, Cleo saved us. And it just shows that she really is part of that family, no matter, and, like, when you think of it just in retrospect, for all the moments where she is put in her place by Senora, Sofia, that, like, it's really, it's out of love. It's not out of, like, this is where you stand. This is just, like, you are part of the family. Like, you know how you yell at people?
Yeah.
But it's still out of love.
And it's also, it shows that there is a specific level of comfort and closeness, because you wouldn't do that with an acquaintance. No. So she's part of the family. Like, when the person yells at her, she knows that she's not going to lose her, that she's family. She's like blood in a sense. And there were so many cute other touches. I don't want to go too off topic, but just with right. the kids, like, reassuring her when she was sad and had a tummy ache, but it was really, she was pregnant, and she's like, and Pepe is like, no, like, oh, why are you sad? Don't be sad. And he just goes and hugs her, and it just shows the innocence of children. And children mm-hmm. are so beautiful. They know when something's wrong, but
they always know.
They have, like, this innocence about them where they just want to make people feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very touched by the movie. I wouldn't say it's the best movie I've ever seen, but I did really enjoy it, and I thought it was very different from any movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was definitely touched by her performances for those moments when she announced her pregnancy to the matriarch, to when she lost the child, to when she admitted she didn't even want the child in the first place. Like, those three moments throughout her pregnancy, like, it really, just as an actress, for a first-time actress,
mm-hmm.
like, wow.
Pretty amazing. Unbelievable.
Amazing. Yeah. So we'd definitely be remiss if we didn't talk about the cinematography for this film, because gorgeous all around. I mean, a lot of long, real-time slow pans or tilts up here and there, but a lot more, like, panning from left to right. But what mm-hmm. were your thoughts of the general scope in the landscape and seeing Mexico, because they shot on location, but just seeing the whole world of Aroma?
Yeah, like I said, everything felt so real. We see every detail. We see vendors selling food in the streets. We hear the noises. It's almost like we're there. Even with the way the camera pans, we're following, you know, the maid on her adventures. We're in the thick of things. We're right there. We're not just, like, observing. I know it's very voyeuristic, because it's like we have a bird's eye view, but it felt like I was part of that family. I felt like I was in there. Like, we see the dog and the birds and, like, all these little touches where I just feel like, okay, like, I feel like I'm here with them. Like, I get it. I totally get what this family is about. And that's really hard to do, to be connected to characters when there's no clear plot. But I was very connected to the characters.
Yeah, and I felt like I knew their world. Like, I knew the house. Definitely, like, the rooms that they were in, the different personalities, and the differences from what the house looked like at the beginning of the first opening shot to the end, where it's, like, a little bit more cleaner, more organized, because the father is now gone. But just, like, you get the personalities of everybody no matter what scene it is, like when it shows the world, when they go to the martial arts place, there's just like different personalities in every scene that play and reflect the emotion that we're supposed to be feeling as an audience. Mm-hmm. And I think it was beautiful. And it was in black and white, so it made it look even more simplistic, but beautiful. Just seeing the world and all the tracking shots. I mean, definitely check out our notes because unfortunately, we can't cover it all. But that whole hospital delivery scene was done in one take.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. And she didn't know that she would lose the baby. Like, he didn't tell her that. He kind of switched things up and mm-hmm. would, like, do one thing and then give them, like, the wrong message so that the performance would be more authentic. And I feel like that definitely showed.
Yeah, and I think that's a great directing choice of Alfonso Cuarón. He purposely didn't tell his actors, like, certain things in the script. Not one person got a full script. Mm-hmm. And even the direction notes that he gave to one actor would be completely contradictory to another actor in the exact same scene. So they would play off each other in real emotions. So to not know that she was actually going to lose the baby, that, I mean, that's like, even more genuine performance.
Mm-hmm. And she's living it in the moment. She's not anticipating, because I think the whole thing with acting, it's not about anticipating, it's about reacting. It's about being in the moment.
Yeah, and I think it's beautiful, like, in that sense, because also the editor, Adam Goh, who also edited this with Alfonso, he finally read the script fully until the whole movie was shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even the production crew didn't know the entire story
while
filming, which is, like, such a hard thing to do because everyone should be on the same page when you're trying to make a film.
Well, they also shot in sequence, which is really interesting.
Yeah, chronologically.
That's so bizarre.
Rare, especially with locations they're returning to, you know. So it's the kind of privilege that only a director of Cuarón's, what's the word I'm looking for?
Status, stature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stature is exactly the word I was looking for. Has access to, but because... It makes me happy he made this film in this stage of his career because he was allowed those extra privileges that really, I think, make the movie special.
Yeah. And I think it definitely helps Cuarón to have so many reputable movies under his belt now that people can give him the time and respect and the money and attention for him to do now a passion film. Yeah. This was a passion project.
Then definitely. He can put gravity into his movie.
Yeah, literally. What are your thoughts of the whole water shot? We see it at the beginning of the film with the whole washing of, you know, all the dog poop away. But then we also see it at the end. It kind of bookends the film and even with the waves. But the whole metaphor of just water and, like, the washing away of memories and cleansing and all that.
I kept thinking when I first watched the movie and I was trying to get through it, I was like, why are they, like, there's a reason that they're having this super long scene in the beginning and why, like, this feels like an end scene. This does not feel like an opening scene.
Yeah.
And we see something similar again at the end. But I think there are a lot of reasons that happened. I think the reason we see the scene is so that we get a glimpse into the maid's life. It's showing, like, oh, we're opening with her world, her doing this tedious task over and over again and doing it so meticulously, not just doing it like a sloppy job, but like really getting every last bit out of there, like really working hard. And we're like, okay, there's like loyalty there. She's cleaning, she's doing her job. And I think also, like, as much as you try to wash some things away, some things never come out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't fully wash something out without soap. It won't fully be cleansed. As much as you try to scrub and scrape away, it's kind of like how there are still scars, there's still trauma there, even though water is so therapeutic and cleansing. It doesn't fix everything.
Yeah, and just the symbolism of water is, like, first cleansing, but also rebirth, too. It's like we see a different type of Cleo person at the end.
We do.
And I think it's just, like, starting another different life, even though she's the same person, but it's just starting anew, really. And I thought it was visually very well represented in this film. So a little bit about just the distribution. So this was a Netflix distributed film because Cuarón was, like, really He was really adamant about putting it on Netflix because he wanted a wider global audience, which Netflix has, the international audience. So what are your thoughts of putting it on Netflix?
I think that's so smart, and I think it just plays to the fact that you don't have to have a theatrical release to have a good movie. And I think, in a way, he's trying to, like, draw more attention to platforms like Netflix, Amazon Prime, because it's not about where it's shown, it's about people seeing it, right? How many people are going to be able to see a theatrical release? Like, this is much more convenient for people who have streaming services, and with this becoming the new norm, now it's more accessible.
Right. So Netflix acquired the distribution rights for the film in spring of 2018, and the deal also included a theatrical distribution. So there is very, very limited theater releases, very limited. You have to be in, like, the metropolis cities like L.A., mm-hmm. New York. So very, very limited, and it's only reached, like, 3.5 million. That's it, just in theatrical. But it's already released on Netflix, so anyone can watch this who has a Netflix subscription. But this is the first Netflix original film that is nominated for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts of that? Because this is, like, a lot of controversy within the Academy Awards, because they're usually so gung-ho about streaming platforms being nominated.
Yeah, I don't get how they were able to get that nominated and go through that loophole. I really don't get it.
Caron.
Yeah.
The power of Caron.
There's also very limited release. So yeah, they'll do this with streaming movies where they'll do the obligatory theatrical release in, like, four cities,
mm-hmm.
and then release it just to get that credibility.
Right.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time we've seen it. We saw Annihilation last year, also had an international Netflix release. And what was the one with Mahershala Ali that was, like,
Moonlight?
2 years ago? No, no, no.
Oh, it was different,
like,
one?
It was, like, 2 years ago. That was also a Netflix film.
Oh.
It might, no, sorry. It's, I think it was Idris Elba. Sorry. Don't kill me. But that one got a lot of attention, or a lot of people said that one should have been nominated, but it wasn't because it was released via Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Beast of No Nation.
Beast of No Nation. Yep. That's the one. Thank you. Yeah, so, and I mean, good for the Academy for, like, awarding Netflix, and I think this opens the door to like, future films.
Yeah.
And maybe on Hulu, maybe on Amazon, you know? So, like, I think it's gonna have legs for Roma.
And it's also creating more competition within those streaming services to produce better and better content, so I don't think it's a bad thing at all.
No, no. So, so many Oscar nominations. There's 10 for Best Picture, Best Actress for Yalitza Aparicio, Best Supporting Actress for Marina de Tavira, Best Director, Foreign Language Film, Best Original Screenplay, Cinematography, Sound Mixing, Production Design, and Sound Editing. I think it's actually going to get a lot of love because it's Cara.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
So. I think, yeah. Yeah, I don't know which one is going to win. It would be crazy if she wins Best Actress for her first time in a movie. That would be pretty incredible.
I don't think she is, because I think Glenn Close is going to take it. But I think, Caron is, he definitely brought the attention to this film. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. In the meantime, Mina, where can everyone keep following you?
You guys can follow me on Instagram at Mina Makes Magic. I go live and do a lot of videos where I talk about movies and also my daily routine. So follow me on there.
There you go. And you can follow me everywhere at Serafini TV. You can follow all of us here at The Popcorn Talk. We have covered all of the Best Picture nominated films now. So that means we're going to do an Oscar special.
I am so excited for that.
For the anime, so, because we've officially covered all the pictures that are nominated. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.